This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
We're all familiar with the life stages of cats. Kittens, frenzy, bundles of fur and fun with rare medical problems. Adults, sometimes playful, usually sleep a lot and no health issues. And then we have our seniors. Sleep, sleep more, eat, poop, and sleep some more. Health concerns tend to erupt overnight without warning. But on closer inspection, the life stages of our felines are much more complex. And with a healthy dose of proactive veterinary care, your cat can live a longer, health-filled life, and you can have reduced veterinary bills. My guest is Dr. Jessica Quimby. She is board certified in small animal internal medicine and completed a PhD focused on feline chronic kidney disease, CKD. She is currently an associate professor at The Ohio State University. Her research includes improving supportive care and quality of life for cats and CKD. Dr. Quimby has received the International Renal Interest Society Award and an AVMF Wynn Feline Foundation Research Award. Great, great honors. We'll be right back after this short break.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Quimby, thank you so much. I can tell that you are an aficionado of cats.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
So life stages, I kind of said, all right, we have kittens, we have adults, we have seniors, but it does break down more specifically than that. Can you explain a little bit, what are some of the life stages of our cats?
Yeah, I think you've kind of outlined it very well in that for me, for the medical perspective, I do expect something a little bit different in each life stage of the cat. We certainly have the kitten, we have the young adult, but then we actually have a mature adult stage and then our seniors. And part of the reason for breaking things up into that frame is to perhaps give the pet parent a little bit of an idea of what to expect during those stages. So like you mentioned, we have an exuberance of energy in that young kitten. But as we go into the adult years, there are a different host of problems to watch out for, things like obesity or dental disease that we can be very proactive about managing. And then as we move into the mature cat and into the senior era, we're looking for, we're trying to identify early indications of disease. So like you mentioned, things don't come upon quite so suddenly. Maybe we actually do have an indication that something is coming down the line. So as we view this overall staging of how a cat goes through its life, we can approach things a little bit more systematically and try to make recommendations that will really hone in on the medical needs for that cat for each stage in its life.
I find it so frustrating and so saddening in clinical medicine when a new client comes in, a cat's just not doing well, and it happens to be, 12, 13 years of age. And, I'll ask my usual questions. So, hi, how long has this been going on? And, oh, yes, by the way, when was the last time your cat was seen by a veterinarian? Oh, it's totally indoor cat. It's been totally healthy. And the last time the cat was seen when it was a kitten, and it was spayed or it was neutered. And it's like, oh, really? And I don't want to chastise them, but it's like, when was the last time you saw your doctor? Hopefully it was since you were 10 years of age and in grammar school. So if we look at the kitten stage, what are some of the things that a pet owner should be looking for and do? Because most people do take their kittens in. That doesn't seem to be a problem. But what are some of the issues as a kitten?
Right. Well, I mean, I think when we have our kittens, we're talking about initial kitten exams that involve deworming and vaccination and sterilization, but also things like training, how to appropriately feed your cat as it ages, you know, expectations, things like making your cat's home feline friendly and providing them the resources that they need. There's so much client education to me that's so inherently important in the kitten visits that happen in that first year of life or so. And that hopefully will set the stage for pet parents to understand that it would really be ideal if we would see the cats at least annually so that we would have a better idea of what has changed for them. You know, do they need that dental cleaning? Do we need to calculate calories differently? Have they gained too much weight? And really be able to be preventative and warn people about what's going to happen at each one of these life stages. So for me, it's the setting the stage. Not only do we have so many important things behaviorally and socially and medically to accomplish for our kittens, it really allows us to set the stage for expectations later on in life.
Oh, I love it, being proactive. You were talking about feline friendly. How do you describe a feline friendly home?
Yeah, so I think it's important to think about maybe the expectations that a pet parent might have versus the expectations of the cat living in the home. And usually when we get into conflict, it's when those two don't quite see eye to eye. And so thinking about the concept of actually having adequate resources in the home. So, you know, of course, we think about like, well, how many food and water bowls and litter boxes, but things like places to hide, you know, perches or special things like beds, toys, and then just social interaction. Literally, how many laps are available? How much territory to play is available for each cat? And do they have the ability to live their life without the interference or domination by another cat in the household? So not only just the single cat and what it might ideally want, all of those resources, the pillars of an ideal feline environment, but then also thinking about when we have multiple cats, do you actually have enough resources for everybody? You know, if you have five cats, then maybe one place for them to hide is definitely not enough. And we need to consider about how do we distribute resources throughout the home to make everybody happy.
And I see this cat on your lap right now. It's like, hi, mom, are you talking about me?
Yes.
And being a single cat mother myself, I have two cats and there are so many times that, you know, a cat will come into the clinic or I'll find some kitty somewhere. It's like, oh, I want to take you home. And I realize I only have two hands. So, you know, okay, one hand for each cat. And yeah, so I've limited myself to just two kitties and it's so difficult. But I agree, making sure that they have the resources is important. And you mentioned obesity. And so many times we'll have these little pudgy kitties and they come in and they're these little fluff balls and oh, they're so cute. And it's like, okay, I need to start talking to these folks about obesity. And they think I'm crazy when I'm talking about obesity at such a young age. Why is it important for kittens not to carry extra weight?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the problems that we have is thinking about caloric requirement, first of all, and pet parents' understanding of what is an appropriate calories. Because if they're going to get spayed or neutered, their metabolic needs might change quite quickly. And actually, in a time frame when we might actually not see them until their next exam, and then suddenly they're overweight. But I very do much care about that in the young adult, because it's harder to get that weight off. And then they may be prone to things like diabetes, or it's not going to help respiratory disease or heart disease, or certainly osteoarthritis as they get later on in their years. So I feel like the first half of the cat's life stages, we spend trying to keep the weight off. And then when they get to the seniors, we spend a lot of time trying to keep the weight on them as they're struggling with multiple concurrent diseases. So through all of that, a good understanding of nutrition and what our caloric goals are for the feline patient, I think is really important. And that's definitely, you know, a conversation that we have with the owner, and seeing them for that regular annual visit helps with that conversation. It gives us the opportunity to say, you know, Fluffy's we need to cut down on the calories, or we've had some weight loss here. We really need to look into why that's happening.
And weight loss, as you're mentioning, is important, but we need to do it so carefully and so much differently than we do for a person or even a dog, where you can really cut back. It's not the safest thing for any of us to do, but with a cat, oftentimes people aren't aware that, okay, you're going to eat this food, and if you don't like it, I don't care. Finally, you're not going to starve yourself to death, and you will eat it. And sadly, that's not the case. Can you describe what happens briefly when a cat, for not feeling well or being forced to eat a food it doesn't like, doesn't eat sometimes as short as 24 hours?
Yeah, so it is, unfortunately, like you said, a special case for cats. When we have a weight loss program, we want to make sure to do that gradually. And when they get sick as well, if they lose weight too suddenly or are losing a lot of weight or not eating enough calories, they unfortunately can be prone to getting hepatic lipidosis or fatty liver disease. And when that happens, actually what the body does is it's not getting nutrients at that moment. So it actually ends up trying to process fat from the body to use as energy. And that can end up depositing in the liver, and that can make them quite sick from that condition. So we often see that condition crop up if cats have undergone like a very stressful event, or they have an underlying illness that has made them stop eating, even for a relatively short period of time, can unfortunately then bump them into this condition. So we're very careful with making sure that inappetence, or especially anorexia, does not go unaddressed in the cat. And then also when we are trying to get them to lose weight, to do so in a safe manner.
So we've kind of talked about the kittens. That's usually the fairly easy stage. You get some vaccines, get them neutered, talk about their behavioral issues, make sure they keep their little weights under control. And then you have that stage you're talking about, young adult. That seems to be pretty turnkey. They're going to go through that stage. There's really not much that you need to be concerned with or that you need to seek a veterinarian's attention. But that's not right. What do we need to watch for during that stage?
Yeah, I kind of in my mind think of those as the disappeared years, unfortunately, because I feel like it's the life stage of the cat that we just don't, they're perceived as being very healthy, and we don't necessarily get them into the clinic in order to be looking at them. And actually, there are a host of things that can crop up during that period. As we already mentioned, dental disease and obesity, but then also that's during the life stage during which social maturity is happening. And so behavioral changes are also alterations and just the way they look at the world may be happening. But then also there's a host of diseases like interstitial cystitis or asthma, heart disease, and if they're a diabetes, unfortunately, lower urinary disease like stone disease, those tend to crop up in this young adult period. And those are the types of things that we potentially want to monitor for. If there's behavioral problems that are occurring, I definitely want to know as soon as possible. It's no good to me when someone comes in and says the cat has been house soiling for the last 5 years. It's going to be much more challenging to address that than, you know, if at my annual exam when the cat is 3, I learn that this happened a relatively short time period ago, then let's look at the situation. You know, we need to do our environmental assessment, our health assessment, determine why it is now we have a change in behavior that obviously is potentially a negative behavior that will affect the bond between the pet parent and the pet. So it's important for us to have that assessment as well during this period. And so they look healthy from the outside, but, you know, medically or emotionally, they might actually be struggling with something that it would be really good to get to the bottom of sooner rather than later.
Dr. Quimby, I love the fact that you're talking about behavior, because sadly, I think there are many pet owners and many veterinarians who, okay, they take the temperature, they listen to the heart, they poke around a little bit, they give it the vaccine. Okay, fine. See you in a year. And sometimes, you know, we're busy, veterinarians are busy, and or we forget to ask, because depending on when they graduated from veterinary school, they may not have been really informed that you have to look at the whole animal sometimes and look at that behavior. So I love it when clients will say, oh yeah, and I'm noticing this change of behavior, or it's just acting differently. It's like, oh, thank you very much. I forgot to ask that question. So I love it when clients keep even like a little health diary. Yes. Is it pooping? Is it peeing? Is it doing all these things? How's the appetite? And what's going on between its little ears? That has a lot to do with a good quality of life.
Yeah, for sure. It's I think just that concept of the emotional as well as the medical health of the cat is a really important one, and one that we're increasingly recognizing or advocating for. And that to me is really an important part of promoting the bond in terms of making sure that our cats can live the best lives that they can and be happy in their home, and that their pet parent is happy with that pet as well as much as possible.
And I love your saying that, you know, being proactive is so important because, yes, you catch it sooner, it's going to be easier to treat, it's going to be less expensive to treat, and you're more likely to have a better outcome. So even though you have that young adult that looks healthy, get it into your veterinarian at least once a year. Make sure that everything on the inside looks as good as it does on the outside. Inexpensive veterinary bill out the door. Great. See you next year, unless there's an issue. I'm talking right now with Dr. Jessica Quimby. She is board certified veterinarian. We are going to be talking about these life stages. We've just finished with kitten and with young adult. Once we finish this break, we're going to come back and talk about that maturer adult. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
For those fortunate to have experienced the deep bond and unconditional love of a companion animal, the death that follows can be one of the most difficult and misunderstood losses to go through. Many times, this devastating loss goes unrecognized and trivialized by family and friends, leaving grieving pet parents struggling to find healthy ways to cope with the loss. In And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal for healing the loss of a pet, Dr. Julianne Corbin calls attention to the difficulties unique to the loss of a beloved pet and provides an interactive and compassionate guide to help you process your loss and work towards coming to a place of peace and healing. For those interested in journal therapy and looking for a professionally written and compassionate resource to help understand and reconcile the grief associated with the loss of your pet, this book is for you. And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal by Julianne Corbin, is now available for purchase on Amazon and other major book retailers.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
So, Dr. Quim, question for you. So, we have this kitten, young adult, they're looking fabulous. And now, again, we're kind of getting into that stage where the adult, again, it seems to be a pretty low-key stage of life. What can we look for then? Why do they need to come in on a yearly basis? And why do they need to be vaccinated? That's another big pushback I get. You know, it's only an indoor cat. Why does it need to get vaccinated? Let's start with that one.
Yeah, so I do think that even as an indoor cat, there is risk, right? And the key to a good vaccination program for your clinic is to actually assess each individual cat and decide what their needs are for their vaccination program. But we do still recognize that even the indoor cat does have some risk. Potentially, let's say they would actually unfortunately get out of the household, or if there's dog members coming into the household, you know, those types of things. When it comes to upper respiratory viruses, of course, those really can be everywhere and come in on the owner as well. So even being indoors, there is still some risk. And certainly for me as a veterinarian, that's very high in my mind because I'm always coming home thinking, you know, making sure that I've completely changed my clothing and washed up before I'm handling my own cats, you know, and of course, keeping them up to date. But so they might have a slightly different risk profile than another pet that isn't owned by a veterinarian. So it's really an individual program for each cat. But we do want to recognize that even for that indoor only pet, it really is pretty important to stay up to date.
I love it. The American Animal Hospital Association has laid out some great guidelines for vaccines. And that's one of the things we follow at my practice. And one is giving leukemia virus vaccines to kittens. We don't do it as they're adults staying indoors because you said exactly that. Sometimes these kids do get out. And those proactive things of doing heartworm control. Heartworm, the disease carried by mosquitoes, even though they're totally indoors. Mosquitoes still get inside. Flea control. Fleas can jump as far as a mile in a day. You have a screen door, a flea can get through that. And once they're in the house, so hellacious to get rid of those little guys and can cause multiple medical issues. What should a pet owner be looking for in that mature adult cat to say, maybe something's not right?
Yeah, so I think for me, especially as an internal medicine specialist, the mature adult cat is when things may start to happen, if you will. So we have obviously many diseases that are related to age or tend to be increase in incidence with age. And so I think we have to have heightened monitoring, like you mentioned, with the onset of clinical signs. So being aware of what subtle signs of sickness are in cats, they're very good at hiding when something is wrong, right? They like to pretend, I'm fine, until they can no longer hold it together. And then you have a crisis. So we really want to be aware of any subtle changes in appetite, in litter box habits, in weight loss or muscle mass loss, behavioral changes as well, as we mentioned, that would be harbingers that, you know, something is going on with the cat. And this can be quite subtle. But paired then with the evaluation of the veterinarian is really important to physically to look at how things are going, your abdominal palpation, that auscultation, your full physical exam. And then this is where also we're potentially wanting to become more regular about assessing with lab work, looking for things like trends. Trends are really important. I'm going to be able to better interpret lab work that happens in your senior years if I have some baseline to go on when the cat is a little bit healthier. And I'm looking for things like a decrease in urine concentrating ability or a slight increase in rise in creatinine over time to say, hey, I think maybe we're trending towards having some early chronic kidney disease. And also just those, the weight, the trends in weight, just a, you know, 5% weight loss gradually over time is a tiny amount, relatively speaking to other species. But in the cat, that could be like 0.2 or 0.3 kilograms. If that's continuously, insidiously happening, then we're thinking, well, there may be a disease creeping in here that we need to be aware of. So it's all these little clues that I'm picking up in that life stage that indicate to me that maybe we're starting to develop a disease. And again, as you mentioned, catching that earlier or being aware that that's starting to happen gives us more power to be able to monitor appropriately and act when needed.
You bring up kidney disease. I know that's your special interest, and it is one of the things I monitor so closely with my cat patients, because trying to explain to them about kidney disease, and it's like, you know, geez, these numbers, you know, are just kind of going up, doc. Why are you just so concerned? It's like, well, the way I explain it, you have a twin sister or brother that needs a kidney transplant. You donate one of yours. You're now down 50% of what you started off life with. And if you do the numbers after you recover from surgery, you're going to look pretty good still, because we only really need that one kidney. But if we lose 75% of our total kidney function, that's when those numbers start to rise. So I love it now that the IRIS Society, so the International Renal Interest Society that you're a part of and you got an award from, they look at it differently. Can you explain a little bit about kidney disease, why we need to look so early and watch for these trends?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that early detection of disease, we're of course still trying to figure out what the best action to take when we're diagnosing early kidney disease. But once we have decided that we think we have a diagnosis of kidney disease based on those lab work parameters or imaging of the kidney, then that's when we go to those IRIS guidelines for deciding what stage of kidney disease the cat is in. But there's actually a lot of really great information about that initial diagnosis of chronic kidney disease on the website as well that I would refer people to in terms of how we make that initial diagnosis. And again, the importance of that is knowledge is power to me. It really does change how I would address things. You know, I'm just going to be that just a little bit more careful with that cat if it needs a dental cleaning. I mean, of course, we're careful with all of our patients, but it might mean heightened monitoring. It might mean we need to make sure that I'm making decisions knowing that, like you said, it looks okay on the outside, but the kidney is a little bit compromised. And we need to be a little bit more judicious about what drugs we might choose if that kidney is affecting function or metabolism of drugs. So that information just gives me more power to determine what's the best way to help my patient through everything that it might be undergoing.
You'd mentioned, you know, how do we address it? And one of the ways that I think oftentimes veterinarians and pet owners address something like kidney disease is talking about diet. Can I change the diet? And before we get specifically into kidney disease and diet, just life stages in general. You go to the pet store, you go to the grocery store, you're in the pet food aisle, and there's kitten food, there's adult food, there's senior food. How do you know? Can you just feed a general food to everybody? If just because you're a senior cat, do you necessarily need to eat a senior food?
Right. It's a great question. And honestly, I think there's still a lot of information that we need to gather in this area. But the concept behind the senior diet is that it would be one that is a little bit reduced in phosphorus, which if you have early kidney disease, would potentially be an appropriate food to feed the cat. It's also not going to hurt an animal that potentially has appropriate kidney function. It's appropriately balanced enough for anyone at that point in time. So there are several brands. There's actually a lot of flavors out there now that are coming in like 7+, 11+, or whatever it is, a senior version. And sometimes we might use those in the senior cat, or we might recommend them in the early stage chronic kidney disease cat, because we truthfully don't have enough evidence yet to determine to what degree you need to be on which kidney diet if you have very early chronic kidney disease. It's a huge question that still needs to be answered. And there's several people actually working on this question to try to provide us with more information. But really the key thing is whenever we would recommend a diet for that patient, we really need to come back and assess how the cat is doing on the diet. We need to decide what's an appropriate caloric amount for them, and then decide what their response is, making sure they're eating their caloric requirement and that they're neither, still too obese, or they're actually not continuing to lose weight. And so for me, that's a really important goal, is if I've made a decision about a diet that seemed appropriate at the time, it might be that 6 months later, actually, we need to swerve and, make a different diet recommendation. So that nutritional follow-up is just a really key part to this. And that's why as we start to move into that senior life stage, we actually are going to be thinking about seeing these patients more frequently. So it's more common then that we would want to be seeing that patient every 6 months as opposed to annually, because things are changing. You're getting the onset of more diseases. There's more monitoring. Once we think we do have early chronic kidney disease, we want to keep an eye on how that might be progressing. And so that's where that usually just organically comes about. There's more things that we need to be checking back up on and making sure that we don't need a new plan based on how that cat has been doing at home.
I love it, Dr. Quimby, because yes, diet is so important. And there are times when, I'll tell people, all right, this is what I would like the cat to eat. And there's various flavors and various forms, and some are gravy and some are dry and whatever. And you gradually try to transition the cat to it. And if they look at it and going, no, this is not happening, folks, I am not eating any of your special foods, I'll always say eating something is so much more important than eating nothing of what I want them to eat. So that follow-up and that give and take conversation is imperative. If you could kind of touch briefly on prescription foods, I think many pet owners think veterinarians are just trying to make an extra buck by recommending selling prescription diets. How are they different from over-the-counter foods?
Yes, that's obviously a very good question that people are asking, especially when expense is an issue, because I do recognize that prescription food can be expensive. But I would also say that there's a lot of boutique brands out there that are quite expensive as well. And really what a lot of the prescription foods bring to me is that they have actually, in a lot of cases, been investigated for the disease condition. We have assurance from a larger food company about the quality control of the food. And a lot of times we have studies. I'm a very evidence-based person. So I have a study that tells me this food was tried in this particular disease, and this is the effect that we saw. And they will be specially formulated for some aspect of that disease condition. So there's truthfully just a lot of thought and a lot of science that has gone into the typical diet that I don't think is really appreciated when it comes to just looking at the labels, And so that's kind of what it means to me, that I know that I can also kind of determine typically what effect I'm going to get for that food. But like you mentioned, the cats always have their own opinions. So we may have an ideal plan, and then we have to kind of pivot and decide, again, how do we meet caloric intake requirement, but then still get them to eat as much as the desired diet as possible, with then, supplementing with something else or mixing two different types of prescription items together, potentially, in order to come up with the best nutritional plan.
And since we're talking about life stages, I love it when a client has a kitten and says, all right, I am going to offer this baby a smorgasbord of different foods, keep changing things up so we know we're going to have a cat with a very educated palate. So it's not going to be stuck just on this one type of food, this one form of it, and I'm not going to ever eat anything else. Because if that cat ever, you run out of food or they stop making it or the kitty becomes ill, it's so much harder to get that baby to eat something, anything other than what it was stuck on.
Yeah, it's a very true statement. And we always consider that when the cats are in hospital as well. You'd think in that moment that they would want some, you know, like really juicy, you know, flavorful food. And then we just have cats who aren't eating and say, you know what, I wonder if this is a kibble cat. And you bring kibble and they're like, the food service has been terrible. Where has the kibble been? And suddenly, you know, they dive into the bowl, even though they've been feeling poorly, and they were just waiting for their preferred food, you know, item to come along, if you will. So it is something that we really struggle with. And yes, it's harder, especially when we think about water as a component of nutrition as well, and keeping the elderly cat, the senior cat hydrated, you know, that comes into play as well. We have lots of cats who actually don't like canned food, and that it prevents a different challenge, if you will. So it is helpful if they have that exposure young so that we can have an option in terms of what we feed them, and it helps us better tailor their nutritional plan again.
So Dr. Quimby, if you can just wrap it up, any words of wisdom on life stages of cats, what pet owners along with their veterinarians need to do to make sure that you get them from kitten to super senior as healthy as possible?
Well, obviously the cat is a very, very special creature.
We're
prejudiced, right? We're a little biased. But I think to me, really, the key is just recognizing that each cat really is an individual, right? And so we're not trying to put them in boxes here by presenting this life stages, but it's important to understand medically what changes over the life of the cat and how that individual assessment of what they need medically and emotionally may change over the course of their life. So it's meant to give us some structure to know what to look for.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you so much. My guest today has been Dr. Jessica Quimby. She is board certified in small animal internal medicine with a PhD that focused on feline chronic kidney disease, all too common in cats. She is currently an associate professor at The Ohio State University, and research includes what we just heard about, trying to keep our cats as healthy as possible, as long as possible. Dr. Quimby, thank you so much. Do appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please turn in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.